And we're live.
Welcome back, everyone. Episode 79 of Kids Deserve It. We hope you've been enjoying our weekly chats with educators and game changers from around the country. Also, don't forget, you can check us out on iTunes.
And remember, while you're checking us out on iTunes, if you go on there and leave a review for the show or in any episode and leave your Twitter handle, we select a winner each week to win an autographed book set from Adam and I.
Also, don't forget to join our Kids Deserve It chat on Wednesdays. That's tonight, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This week, we got another great guest, but first we want to introduce ourselves. I am Adam Welcome, Director of Innovation in the Bay Area of California.
My name is Todd Nesloni, Elementary School Principal in Navasota, Texas, and I am thrilled to have our special guest this week, E.B. Zaboy. E.B., thanks for being a guest with us this week.
Thank you, Todd and Adam. Thank you for having me.
We also want to remind our viewers that you can participate in social media using the hashtag KidsDeserveIt, as we always love seeing what sticks out to you, whether you're watching live or listening to this recording later.
So, Evie, we got a few questions for you. So, for those that may not know about you, tell us about yourself.
So, my name is Evie Zaboy. I am Haitian American. I was born in Haiti, and I came to the U.S. when I was 4 years old. I moved to a neighborhood called Bushwick in Brooklyn, New York. And then moved to Queens, and I'm a native New Yorker in that sense. I've been writing for 20 years. I got my start in journalism. I love investigative reporting. Then I became a slam poet, then my poems started to get longer. They became short stories. My short stories became novels. I also was into professional storytelling as well. I'm really into mythology and folklore. I love science fiction and fantasy. I love magical realism, and all of those elements make it into my books. I'm also a mom of three, ages 10, 12, and 14, and my husband is a 20-year veteran high school and middle school art teacher.
Nice. Love it. Well, E.B., you wrote a book called American Street, which I read recently, and I loved it. I love the characters. I love their interaction, the story that you told with them. Can you tell our listeners just a little bit about that story and how it came to be?
American Street is about a 16-year-old Haitian-American girl named Fabiola who moves to Detroit with her mother, who's about to move to Detroit with her mother, when her mother gets detained at Kennedy Airport on their way to Detroit. So Fabiola has to move on her own to meet her aunt and three cousins. Of course, like many other immigrants leaving a place that's supposedly broken to move to somewhere where they feel that they can live the American dream, Fabiola thinks she's going to have the life, a free education, getting a good job, sending money back to relatives at home. But when she gets to the west side of Detroit, she finds out that the American dream is not what it's supposed to be. Her three cousins just don't make right choices because of their environment. But in the novel, I wanted to explore what it means to come from one broken place, supposedly broken place. Haiti is usually described as one of the poorest or the poorest country. Moving to that from that place to probably one of the poorest cities in the country. And I don't really like to use the word poor. I like to use disenfranchised, marginalized, much like Haiti is disenfranchised and marginalized. So Haiti and Detroit have a similar history in that they were both thriving places. Haiti was once the jewel of the Antilles, the automobile manufacturing center of capital of the country. So what happens when these places become broken through lack of employment, lack of opportunities for people who live there, and just this idea of moving to that place and still trying to hold on to the American dream, but the American dream has failed so many people there. And it's basically the story of a teen girl trying to navigate that space and her cousins as teen girls trying to navigate that space as well.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So you also have two new books coming out, Pride and My Life as an Ice Cream Sandwich. Can you give us like a little bit of preview about that? Is it okay to talk about them pre-release?
They're not quite new yet. They're still in development. Okay. I think I submitted a final draft to Pride this morning. Ice Cream Sandwich is in revision. So Pride will be out fall 2018, and My Life as an Ice Cream Sandwich will be out in 2019. So Pride is a sort of a retelling of a Western classic, Pride and Prejudice, set against a backdrop of a gentrifying neighborhood in Brooklyn, which is Bushwick. That's the neighborhood I first moved to when I came here. Bushwick is not the same. It's undergoing lots of changes. So I wanted to set a love story, a sweet and political love story in that neighborhood. My Life as an Ice Cream Sandwich features a 12-year-old quirky sci-fi nerd who just moved to 1984 Harlem, kind of at the height of the fledgling hip-hop movement. So she's coming into conflict with the girls and boys in her neighborhood who love hip-hop, who love just being kind of like badass kids, but all she wants to do is go to outer space and be the first kid in outer space since Ronald Reagan just announced the Teacher in Space program.
I love those. So thinking about your writing process, what does that kind of process look for you? How do you go from the start of this idea to a full-fledged novel?
It's kind of messy. As I said it before, I have three kids. I'm a very busy mom with kids with active schedules. So I try to have a writing schedule which starts at 5 o'clock in the morning. When I wake up very fresh and I have the ideas of the novel in my head and I want to jump right into it. But the daily activities get in the way. So when I usually sit down by my desk, there's no time to lallygag. I try not to procrastinate. I jump right into the story. So I can't say I have a definitive writing process. But it usually starts with, yes, an idea, sharing it with my editors, just coming up with an outline, coming up with some sort of pitch, some loose thing that I could shape and mold into some story. And the drafting process is just taking that idea and running with it.
So, Ebi, what was school like for you growing up?
Oh, boy. I was an immigrant kid. And my mom thought, I remember my mom thinking that any American school would be a good school because it was free. I got started in public school. However, I was in a public school that wasn't such a great neighborhood. I remember just there being a lot of violence in my community and not kind of like, not the sort of shoot 'em up, bang, bang violence, but just, just unruly schools, schools that had lots of lack of resources. But I'll share the story with you. My mother pulled me out of the public school in my neighborhood because a little boy spat in my face. He did not have nice things to say about how I dressed and how I looked. I was very Caribbean in the sense that I wore my hair and wore different kinds of clothes than the girls in my classroom. And I stood out. So the kids were not very nice to me at all. So she pulled me out of that school and put me in Catholic school. Back then there were two options, public school or Catholic school. Mm-hmm. In my neighborhood in Bushwick, the public school and Catholic school were actually across the street from each other. And It was a different, completely different kind of setting. I went to Catholic school. I was in kindergarten, first grade in public school. In second grade, I started Catholic school. And I felt safe. Teachers, Sister Anne, Sister Mary, Sister Teresa were terribly mean. Babies in Bushwick, and I do remember them hitting kids with the ruler. Hey. Had to put out at me, but there was like a couple of unruly kids. It's not spanking. They got hit on the hand with the ruler, and I don't think that would go fly over now.
No,
but interesting. Interestingly enough, that school building is now a charter school. So I'm noticing all over Brooklyn and all over different parts of the city, there are two options now. The two available now for public schools, which are two, they're both public schools. But I think a lot need that other option because certain kind of education back in their home countries, which was very rigid and colonial education. And I just know that a lot of Haitian and other Caribbean families want that sort of colonial education replicated when they come here and they see that things.
Yeah.
And I did go to public school again for middle school and started Catholic school again for high school.
Okay. So you kind of went back and forth then.
Yeah, and I think it just had to do with finances. Um, we, when I was in Brooklyn, I stayed in Catholic school. My mother moved out to Queens, thinking that Queens is a better environment. Maybe the public schools are better. And that wasn't necessarily the case. I thought it was fine. I felt fine. But as I said before, there's a certain rigidity that my parents were looking for that they didn't think the public schools provided. So when she sent me off to Catholic school for high school, and some of the same things were happening, it's not to say that the behavior was any better. It's just that this idea of having nuns and brothers, or it's a sort of like religious, she thought it was a safer environment at all.
Right. So, Ebi, when you think about literature and as adults reading and books that we're giving to kids that have characters that not only they can relate to, but also feature characters that look nothing like them, what do you see as why is it important for adults and kids to be reading books like that?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question? You were kind of breaking up a little bit.
Yeah, sorry. So when you think about having adults reading books and kids reading books, and you know, we always want them to be reading books that have characters that not only they can relate to, but also features characters that look nothing like them or don't have any kind of the same background as they do. Why do you feel it's important for kids and adults to be reading books like that? Did we lose her?
I can't hear her. I can hear you, but not her.
You there, EB? Oh, she's back. Are you there, EB? I saw her move just a little bit. We'll give her a couple more seconds and see if she comes on back in with us.
All right.
Okay, you there, EB? I heard you.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yes, there we go. Did you hear my question?
Oh, why do I think that? I think what you're asking is something that Rudine Sims Bishop, an educator, calls mirrors and windows
for yes.
themselves and for kids and adults to see into the lives of other kids from other backgrounds. Absolutely, that is important. That is how, you know, that's what makes the world go round, obviously. I think it's so important because it builds empathy. And I think there is a fine line between pity and empathy. And what determines that is how we talk about these books with our with the readers, with young readers, to know that, you know, a story like American Street is not meant to invoke pity. I wouldn't want anyone to feel sorry for my characters or to feel sad for them. What I'm doing is documenting what can happen, what has happened. In many American cities and small towns, we know that violence exists in the lives of young people at any age. And this is something for them and others to kind of have an idea of what it may be like to be in the shoes of people who experience having to make tough choices because of their environments or people who experience a certain kind of violence. To know this is their life, and this is how they may have handled it. This is why they make certain choices, and it's not because that they are intrinsically bad people. There's a number of factors that that contribute to those sorts of actions. So in that sense, when you're looking into the lives of people with experiences different from themselves, I would want readers, young and old, to understand the full range of the human experience, especially in our country, to know that we are not, you know, islands unto ourselves in our wherever we live, whether it's a city or a suburb, to know that right outside our suburb or city, this thing is taking place. They're coming across students, children who have had certain kinds of trauma, and this is what has contributed to it. I think that's the purpose of a story like mine.
Well, you know, Ebi, I think you made a great point too, because, you know, I read a book called The Hate U Give, and then I read yours, American Street. And I think that that book and your book do such a good job, just like you were saying, about showing that you know, we are a product of the experiences that we go through in our lives. And you don't always know everything that led up to that person's life to make them act the way they are today. And there's a character in your story that you find something out about them at the very end that changes your whole perspective of them and why they were the way they are. And then it kind of, it gives you this sense of, well, you know, that person isn't a bad person. That they're not just this born, this terrible human being. These things happened that led to this point with them. And I think that's a powerful statement.
Right. I don't believe, especially when I'm writing about children, I don't believe they're intrinsically bad. That isn't, I don't think that's possible. As a parent, you know, just seeing a precious baby, I think we've all seen babies and held babies. And to know that, okay, you're not, you know, coming into this world thinking I'm going to wreak havoc, you know, and do all these terrible things. There's things, you know, there are things that happen to the child. There's things in their environment. So many things contribute to making a human being and have, you know, them making their choices. And sometimes it's not familial. It's not even community. It can go, it can be historical as well. Right. Trauma, I really believe trauma can live in the bones. Somehow, you know, it's hard to, you know, erase it or grow out of that. And, you know, it helps understand the human experience and the range of human emotions and actions.
All right, Evie. Every week, we like our guests to leave a challenge for our viewers. What is your challenge for the week?
I think my challenge is to, and this just reminds me of what my husband does in his classrooms, what I sometimes did as a classroom teacher, is to ask a child to look into their eyes and really ask them, how was their day? Genuinely ask them, how are you? How are you feeling? How was your day? And to wait for a response. And even if you say, even if they say fine and okay, you know, you can take that or just not push, but you let them know that you're genuinely interested in their well-being by asking that question.
I think that is a wonderful challenge. Well, EB, thank you so much for being a guest with us. I read your book, fell in love with it. And when I reached out to you and you said yes, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. So it was thrilling just to get to hear your perspective today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd and Adam. You guys are doing great work. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we want to thank our viewers for watching the show. Remember, you can tweet us using the hashtag #KidsDeserveIt. We also encourage you to remember to check out our iTunes, leave a review for a free book set, and make sure you include your Twitter handle so we know how to get a hold of you. Check out our Twitter chats on Wednesday, and make sure you check out our next guest, who is Mitchell Meehan. See y'all next week.